David, I got accosted by several people in Arkansas because you weren't there.
I told him you went to get a coffee.
He's like,
I got
I
you
don't care.
covered.
I had several people that wanted that were really disappointed that you weren't around. They said to tell you hello and wanted to see you and
Well, hello. Yes.
There you go. That's pretty much the response that I told them they would get. Yeah. But I was in Arkansas and it was cool.
I had other obligations and I just couldn't go. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
it was a nice event that we threw me, Howard and Jordan, threw an event at the factory that we're working in there. And it was, Bob, it was great that you came. So thank you so much. And, but it wasn't like the big hoopla. It wasn't like make a camp or it wasn't like making it 100. It wasn't that type of event. It was probably, I don't know, Bob, what do you say? About 40 people showed up.
Yeah, 40, 50, something like that.
Yeah. And some great fans came from far away and some fans that like came down the block. Like I heard you talk. I live right here. So it was a nice mix of people from far away and close. And it was a nice event that get for me personally, it was nice to meet some locals because I'll be going back there a little bit more often. And it was a nice event. So for those that don't know, Howard and Jordan and myself acquired a factory in Arkansas. It was through some rambling. It was like it was a real winding road how we ended up here. But it all started with the Walmart deal 2 years ago when I got called by Walmart. One thing led to another, and now we couldn't manufacture in America, so that led to a lot of investigation to try and make things in America. And now we have a factory made in Arkansas, and we ended up there because we were dealing with a partner that was involved with Walmart, which is in Bentonville, and so that's why we're all in Arkansas now. And it's off to a good running start because Jordan's business is the lead client with the most right now with the most turnover of product. Jordan has a company on Etsy called Two Avocados, and he has a healthy business making and selling signs, and that's the majority of what we're making right now. But we're taking in a lot of other Etsy shops. And like I said in my live stream a way back, if you're at capacity in your garage making stuff that's selling and you're sick of it, and you're sick of packing boxes and running the CNC with your feet and typing labels with your hands, that's why we're there to alleviate that if that's something you wanted to get involved in. And it's working out so far.
So the reason I was out there was I was invited to come out there, but I wanted to see the factory and actually meet the other two and just kind of see how it was going because, we've got some ideas, things we'd like to make that I don't really have the capacity to make. And so part of it was just exploration for me and get to hang out with everybody. It's great to see Jimmy again. But I will say that that place is incredibly impressive. I was
It's, isn't it? I haven't seen it in person.
really impressed.
I saw pictures of it all year, but I never was there.
It's gigantic for one. It used to be a Walmart store or a
Yeah, it
Home
was a
Depot or
Walmart
Kmart or
many,
something.
many, many years ago. Some of the old timers that were locals said this was a Walmart, then it was a home center. Most people remember it for the home center. It
Gotcha.
was like a off-branded Home Depot.
Yeah.
And the sign is still in the back when you go for the back entrance.
Oh. Well, it's huge. It's broken into three or four big giant rooms, and they're barely taking advantage of the space. Like, there's just so much space. And that was cool to see, but big buildings are, whatever. It was
Expensive.
actually expensive, I'm sure. Yeah. I can't imagine the cost to cool that place because it was comfortable in there, but good grief.
And we walked around on the roof with one of the maintenance guys who wanted to show us. I don't know if you met Eric. Eric's kind of the main guy in charge of the whole building. Eric showed, and also the operation. Eric showed us around, and he was pointing out several. There's like 15 air conditioners on that roof. He pointed out like five of them that don't work. So we're talking about what to do with them. I'm just, honestly, I mean, it's impressive that I'm a partner in it, but I feel like I'm just tagging along. I'm like, I'm in the passenger seat. But Howard and Jordan keep saying, no, you're a big part of this. I'm like, I keep calling it their business. They're like, no, this is our business. So I appreciate that from those guys.
But it was really impressive, not only the facility, but just like the way that they have it set up and the machines and the people that they had working were great and, working hard and the flow and the kind of, I don't know, the way that the whole thing was running was really impressive to me. It gave me a lot of
Yeah, they've been
hope
at it
for
for a
it.
year. I haven't really,
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked about it earlier, only because we were still working out the kinks with the partners and everything, and it could have gone one way or another. And we worked all the kinks out now, and everything is smoothed out, which is why now finally I'm talking about it. We've been doing it for over a year. And I've been kind of mentioning it a little bit in the past. About a year ago, I went to Arkansas. That's when we were first looking for a location with the other partner. And we settled on a few places. But when I left, it was about a month later, Jordan called me and told me they found this place in Russellville, which is the place we visited, which I hadn't been to until the other day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been going on in the background, and now here we are.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. I was impressed. And just to see, like, to hear a lot of the conversations with other people who are wanting to make things there and what that's going to bring to the facility and to their capabilities, you know.
We're moving into metal now. We just signed a partnership. We're going to go into a partnership with a metal fabricator. I'll talk more about it when everything's up and running. But it's somebody that a lot of people know. So he's going to be making stuff in our factory.
This is very really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a good time. Like, everybody that I met, both, you know, Jordan and Howard, but also just all the people that showed up, all the people that were working, like, just a fantastic group of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. It was very, very comfortable to be there. And other than the 8-hour drive, I drove. but I will say, this was kind of weird. I didn't expect this. So I've not rented many cars in my life, maybe just a couple of times. And we're, you know, I'm still waiting on the Cruiser. It wouldn't make that trip anyway. So I was like, oh, I'll rent a car and it's only me, so I can get some small, you know. And so I just rented a car, didn't really pay attention to what it was. And then I got this, like, I don't know, Camry something, like a 2020 Camry with like the racing package, these tiny little wheels and like sport mode and a this and a that. And a, I don't know what all it was. But that was a very, very fast car. And so it was actually kind of fun to have an 8-hour drive through Arkansas where the speed limit is 75 on the highway. So that was kind of cool. But, you know, so the first 6 hours or so was pretty boring. The last 2 hours was kind of fun because I could open up this car that I'm not used to a little bit and it's not mine. And, you know, but it was a lot of driving in a short amount of time, but it was a good trip. So thanks for having me out.
Of course. No speeding tickets?
No speeding tickets. No. No, I was reasonable. Yeah. I didn't go too crazy. But I'm bringing all that up to say, David, people were asking about you and were, you know, genuinely looking forward to seeing you and stuff. So a lot of people said to tell you hi.
Well, thank you. And hello. And I'm sorry I missed all you.
Well, hopefully we'll do it again sometime. What have you guys been up to? We were traveling. I guess this was last week. Mm. Yeah. End of last week.
Mm.
Beginning of last week? I don't know what that was.
Well, what I've been up to, I was traveling, but I didn't put out any videos, but I've been working. Some of you guys might have seen it. I work with the Millennial Stone Cleaner, Wade Fowler. He's got a big, I'm going to recommend him this week. He's got a big internet presence and he cleans tombstones and grave markers. That's his day in, day out. He has a regular job, but this is something he's always been passionate about. And at the recommendation of some friends, I said, you should start filming that. And when he did, all of a sudden, he has a whole community. And he was going to bring a friend. His friend canceled at the last minute. But he was very happy. And I was obviously very happy that he came. I learned a tremendous amount from him. We dug up and repositioned like 5 or 7 stones. And the biggest one, was a 10-foot tall obelisk. It was a big base, a middle base that has the inscription on it. And an obelisk. So it's actually 4 parts. And each part weighs 1,000 pounds. And we set up a little tripod and we picked it up and moved it and cleaned it and dug out the foundation. I was excited because I was hoping to find not a body, because a couple people asked me, did I see like the tip of a casket? We dug deep, but I was hoping to find at least some sort of remnant of somebody might have put something there that marked the date, like a time capsule or something. Nothing. I didn't find an old newspaper in there or anything. But
this is all recorded.
Yeah, and when we put it all back, I threw one of the DeResta razor blades in there underneath the 5,000 pounds of stone we put back so that when they open it up in 100 years from now or whenever, they'll see it. But I'm glad we did that because I kept saying to him, I'm glad you picked this stone because it was so much work. We started working the day I got back. So I got back on Wednesday evening. Thursday morning, we worked all day Thursday. We worked all day Friday. And then Saturday he had to go do something. And then he says, I'll be back Sunday. Because he's driving all around the Northeast. He's from Iowa, but he's driving all around the Northeast, visiting friends and doing stonework. He went to a couple cemeteries in the short time he was with me. And it was a lot of work, like digging deep. And he kept saying to me, he's going to laugh when he hears this. He kept saying to me, he's like, because I'm Gen X and he's millennial. And he kept saying, he goes, I'm embarrassed that you work so hard and I can't keep up with you. He kept having to like stop. He kept having I'm going to just take a break. And I was just like, all right, you take a break. And I like never stopped once. And once we lifted that last of the four giant stones, and then we were like, okay, let's just dig the hole for the gravel and for the foundation. I chipped my shovel and it just slid across all this dirt. And underneath it was another 1,000-pound rock. But it was a 5-inch, it was probably 500 pounds. It was about 5 inches thick at its thickest, but it was 48 inches square. Like hand chiseled from like a, it was very rough chiseled from a quarry. And that was the foundation underneath this stone. And we didn't have the wherewithal to move it. And he's like, you know what, let's just break it up because we're not going to use it again. So we broke out some sledgehammers and smashed it up and moved it all. And they're like, okay. And then we started, and then there was hundreds of other rocks underneath that. So they dug a deep foundation and just stacked all these slate stone, these blue stones, like you would see a wall made out of, and then put this giant stone on top of it. So it took us another couple of hours to prepare the hole. We just kept pulling out these rocks, and each rock weighed 20, 30 pounds underneath the big one we broke up.
So why pull those out? Why not just use that base as the...
Because they were all just mishaps shaped on top of one another. If there was any order to them, it was all moved around now from the frost and the heave. And so you had stones with like this much dirt between them, like about a half inch or an inch of dirt between them, where they might have been properly stacked. The earth moving underneath them for 150 years has just made them just a mushy thing. And it was really tilted. So it was almost about to fall over. Another winter, I think, and with frost and heave, the obelisk would have fallen over. And the obelisk is on top of the base, is about 7 feet tall.
This is the one you were talking about a few weeks ago, saying you're worried it was going to fall over.
Yeah. Because that's why I say I'm saying all this just to talk about how much work it was. And the fact that I would like to fix this. I go, but that's a lot of work. Let's do all these smaller ones and we could do that another time. And I was just going to put a 2x4 under it so it didn't fall over. But when we started on Friday morning, he's like, he was there a minute before me. And he's like, I think we should do this one. I was like, okay, cool. But when we got into it, I just kept saying, I'm glad you picked this one and not me.
Yeah.
The amount of work we put. Because the fact that he picked it, I knew he wasn't going to stop until it was
right.
done.
Yeah.
If I picked it, he'd be like, all right, you're on your own. You know what you're doing now. No, but we had to dig out. We dug it all that out and put about 40. We had these 3-gallon buckets. We put about 53-gallon buckets of gravel, because there's gravel across the street at the house for the foundation wall rebuild. So I drive my truck over and fill up these 6 buckets and then drive back and then fill up these 6 buckets and then dump them in the hole. And it must have been 40 or 50 buckets. Wow. And they had to be filled with a shovel on a 90-degree day, each one of those. So it was really physically taxing. But, you know, they always say when you're at your limit, you always think you're at your limit. There's always more. And it was one of those days where I was at my limit like 5 times. I know he was, because he kept talking about it. But I'm at my limit, and I'm like, there's always a little more. It's open.
Yeah. So were there no nameplates on that at all? There's no chiseled-in name or dates or anything?
Not by the grave maker. But there's names from the people, of course. And there is findagrave.com. If anybody's at all curious, you can go to findagrave.com and look up the Alan Teeter Road Cemetery. You can do some research on it. Alan Teeter Road Cemetery. It's also called the Ravensburg Family Farm Cemetery. That's the other name for it, because the family that owned the house for so many years, for the majority, is called the Ravensburg family. And so they call it the Ravensburg Family Farm Cemetery on Alan Teeter Road.
That's a cool name.
I joined findagrave.com, and I've been adding pictures of the graves. Some of the graves, all the pictures on there now are from the 80s. Somebody had went on, I guess when the internet finally came out, somebody went through the pictures that they had. Somebody had documented them in photography and went on and put them up in digital prints, put them up digitally. And now I'm going through and just the various pictures that I have of the various graves. I'm looking and adding to photo albums that are already there, what they look like now 40 years later, and adding pictures that aren't at all. So 50% of the graves on there. There's about 150 graves. And 50% of them are photographed on that website. The other 50% I'm going to try and add to as time goes on. So I'll log in every once in a while and add a few pictures.
Cool.
So there you go. That's fun. It's fun researching. And one of the graves that we dug up, I went and looked. I found it in this cemetery online on this findagrave.com. There was a picture of the one grave we repositioned correctly. Right next to it was the one that was broken in the grass. So we knew where it was supposed to be. So we dug around that, and I found the two sections below what was exposed. So there was two sections below this somebody who died in 1800.
Wow.
And his grave I have here on the welding table. I'm going to do a, it's in six pieces now. The gravestone is broken into six pieces. I'm going to piece it back together with stainless steel framework on the back. So the front of it will look normal. You just see 2/4-inch pieces of stainless steel on either side. Mm-hmm. Kind of do a museum hold to keep
it. That's cool.
As if it was like the Rosetta Stone. And then once that's all secured, they're going to put it back in its place. He said don't do epoxy because it never works. You can't really glue stone together for an extended period of time. Especially, and it also doesn't look good. Yeah. Gives you this like muddy. You see a lot of the stones in the cemetery that are broken in half or try to be glued. And now weather has deteriorated the joint, and they're upside down in two pieces, and then there's glue on half sides of the joint.
Yeah.
You know, so it just makes it messy. So I'm going to piece it together as like a jigsaw puzzle in space, and I'll strategically pin it with small pins to keep it from falling out of the frame.
That's really cool.
That's my idea. We'll see. Yeah. So that'll be in the video when I post the video of us doing the restorations. And he'll come back in the spring. He wants to come back. There's lots. He said it was funny. He said this is one of the sites he worked on that was the most peaceful because it's off the main road and only people that live in that area pass by, and they're all like, oh, they're fixing the graves. They don't even care to stop and ask. They just drive it like, hi.
Yeah.
One guy stopped. He says, are you taking or adding? I go, what? Are you taking away or are you adding? I said, we're fixing. He went, okay. And he just drove. I expected like the town supervisor or somebody to come and give us a pain in the back. But nobody did. And we're only doing good, so we're not worried at all. But it was fun. I learned a lot from him. We walked through some of the cemeteries in the neighborhood, and he pointed out lots of historical facts about graveyards that I never knew.
How did he get into such work?
He said he's always been into it. He said it's just something. I think he said his grandfather got him into it because they were taking care of some family graves when he was little. And it's just something. You know how when you go, and this is one thing I learned from him I didn't know. You know when you go into some cemeteries, there's like a, look what seems like a mausoleum. It might be like 20 by 20. It doesn't have a family name on it, so you wonder really what it is. Those are usually called the receiving vault, and that's where they put the bodies if it was wintertime because they couldn't dig a hole. Because this was before hydraulics and backhoes. So they would wait till the springtime and then dig the hole and then bury the people then. So they'd have the ceremony around the, if there was a tombstone and there'd be no body, the body would be in the receiving vault for the winter. Crazy.
They would just like go ahead in the fall, dig a couple extra holes just to have them around, you know?
But they would have to guess who was dying. I guess they'd be.
I guess it would matter.
They need to know who was dying or where. They'd have to look in their crystal ball. So there's lots of little facts like that. There was what I never knew. There was one gravestone that we looked at that, and it wasn't in the cemetery. It was in the nearby town cemetery. It was made out of zinc, and it was made in the early 1800s. It was unbelievably in perfect condition. It looked like it was made last week. And he goes, oh yeah, this is zinc. And there was some sort of like marketing race. The zinc graves they look like cast zinc. And then every letter, everything on them is absolutely perfect. Every edge is still extremely sharp, all the details, but it's pieced together with nuts and bolts from inside. And he said there was like a little bit of a marketing war, and the stone guys won. They said, you really want a zinc tombstone? They're never going to last. And they lost that marketing war. And now the zinc tombstone is in absolutely perfect condition 170 years later. And all the other stone ones are all acid washed and deteriorated. You could hardly read the font on them.
Interesting. So.
Crazy. Yeah. Well, how many graves did you fix and clean up, David?
Zero. I'm way behind on my grave cleanup. I'm way behind. Yeah. That's why I couldn't make it out to Arkansas.
Yeah.
So I finished up a project that I started 2 years ago. A couple years ago, I made some stereo speakers from like a high-end DIY kit. And they've been in our living room. We've been using them for 2 years, but they're just like raw plywood. So it was time to finish them up and make them look pretty. So that's what we were working on the last few weeks. And I made the stands that we were talking about. I didn't do the pour epoxy because it wouldn't, there was no way to pour the epoxy in. But I'm really happy with the way they came out. About 95% happy. I'm actually remaking the grills. And they look really good in our living room. So the next thing I got to do for the living room is make the stereo stand, because we have one of those IKEA ones there, and I need a place to hold all my records and cassettes. And I want to have like a now playing area. And
what did you end up doing with that fin shape in the on the bottom stand? I saw it in the pictures.
It's like an airplane wing, but horizontal and. Or vertical, and the skeleton of it wraps around some steel poles. So there is a top sheet of metal, a bottom sheet of metal with two bars running in between there, and then I cut some insulation foam on the CNC to give it that airplane shape, and then veneer around that, and that worked out really, really good. Yeah,
nice, so,
cool.
It looked good. I saw the you did like a little. Photo montage of it somewhere. I must have seen on Twitter, maybe.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is I made it so the fat part of the airplane wing was supposed to be in the front, but when I'm all done, it just looked like two circular columns. So if I flipped the stands around backwards, it went from skinny to fat, and it looked so much better. So after I was all done, I decided, oh, I'm going to flip them around. And the funny thing is the base is like solid 2-inch walnut. And I used the good side of the walnut for what I thought was going to be the front, and then the cracks where you could see some little checks in the walnut were in the back, but now they're in the front because I flipped the whole thing around. But it's so dark that you can't even tell. When you put oil on end grain of walnut, it just looks black. And they look fantastic. And I could see myself using that foam insulation technique wrapped with veneer again in the future.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. And then yesterday we started filming another video. I got this. I should have brought it in with me. It's a router bit. And it's got like a helical head with the carbide cutters all the way around it. It's the cutting capacity on it is 2.5 inches tall.
Oh my goodness.
It is scary. It's probably, I don't know, an inch and a half of girth. Like, it's so, somebody sent it to me, a local guitar maker sent it to me. He's like, have you seen this bit? And I was like, whoa, that's insane. I'm scared. Just looking at it, I was scared of the photo. So I bought it. It was like $120, and I've been sitting on it for a while because I haven't figured out how to use it.
That sounds uncomfortable.
Sorry, I had to. I love that joke so much.
It's a weird plan, David.
I love that joke so much. Anyway. We finally made some router template type things. I won't give it all away. And we used a bit. And when you put it in the router and you turn it on, it sounds different.
I'm sure.
All those little carbide, like it takes a while to get up to speed because it's so heavy. And then it just creates this like vortex of air around it. And it is.
Wow.
And on the website, they show it being used in a router table as well as a handheld router. I will never put that thing in a handheld router. Like, there will be death and destruction everywhere.
What's the intended purpose for a bit like that?
So it's got a bearing on the top and the bottom. So I think it's used mostly for like patterns and templates.
Oh, for like a guitar body.
Like a guitar body, yeah. And it can go up to just a little over 2.5 inches thick. Yeah. And because it has the carbide teeth, it gets dull. You just turn the carbide teeth, you know, a quarter turn. And it's really cool, and it leaves a super clean cut, even on end grain, and it works great. I just don't see myself using it a lot because it's just so scary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could just start adding like a wavy edge 2x4 to every project you do, and then you could just make a pattern and just like add a detail to the side of a 2x4.
Yeah, it's a pretty impressive bit.
Cool. Are you going to make any guitars with it?
No, I don't think so. Any guitar that I make, well, I always say one thing and then change my mind later, but any guitar that I see myself making in the near future, I will probably do on the CNC because it'll probably be just for me, and it'll probably be a revision of the one that I previously made with the changes that I want to make to it. So yeah. I've got my Fusion 360 file all like, I toy with the file every couple months and it's all perfect. So yeah, I see myself as only using the CNC from now on for the guitar.
Gotcha.
And as you know, guitar videos don't do well anymore. So there will probably be no video.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely not something that works for me anyway.
Yeah, you got to find the twist in it. You know, like I made a guitar out of popsicle sticks, which probably would do well. I turned the guitar in the lathe.
Turn the guitar in the lathe. That would be crazy. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing and hearing that bit. It sounds pretty cool. Well, let's see. What have I been doing? I've been doing a bunch of stuff. We started a video last week, and I'm not even going to talk about it because I think we're probably going to abandon it. It just didn't have the oomph that it should have had.
One. Make it a reel.
Yeah.
Huh?
Make it a reel.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
You sound like you're
not the reel has an oomph or not.
It just kind of like, I don't know. It just didn't have the thing. So. Not a big deal. I've got another idea that I can jump to real quick and hopefully knock off.
Was it that napkin holder that we've been talking about? Is that why you
didn't? No, it wasn't a napkin holder. Maybe I should do that. So while Jimmy and I were hanging out, I don't know why I thought of this. I do know why I thought of this, but Jimmy and I were hanging out and it dawned on me that he was making a joke about making an R2-D2 thing a couple of years ago or something on the show.
Yep.
And he wouldn't tell me what it was. And I was like, come on, enough time has passed. Tell me what the thing was. And now I can't even remember what it was.
I want to do it. I could tell it here because if the video could still be successful, whether people know the joke or not. It would be me going through like scrap steel and making an R2-D2 out of scrap steel. So the video would be like boom, 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 like plasma cut, scrap steel, grabbing bins, nuts, bolts, all welded together. Then I'd have this rusty R2-D2 about the size of a trash bin. And then when all was said and done, I would just step on his foot and his whole head would open up and I would just throw garbage in it. It would come
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. That's great.
That was the idea I remember. That was like 5 years ago when we thought old timers will remember that joke. I said, I had a perfect idea. I'll make it this week. And I, of course, now here it's 5 years
that
later.
Week, yeah.
Yep. It's still on my list to do.
As it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty good idea.
So, yeah. You said, we were having lunch or something. You're like, remember that R2-D2 you were going to make? What was it? Because you were talking about having yours at the fair, at the education
fair. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's what
it was. Well, anyway, since I got back, it was a really good trip out to Arkansas. And then when I get back, it was just, we were trying to shoot this video in a couple of days. I just don't think it has the thing it needs. So probably going to switch gears. But I guess like we kind of had a topic today that is, I don't know, maybe I caused the topic. I'm not sure. There's a bunch of change going on with me and with I Like to Make Stuff. People probably saw on, social media that Josh got a new job, which is very exciting. He is now working at First Build.
Which is a friend of all of ours. Which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. They put on the Louisville Maker Fair, and he's now doing like community engagement and social media and marketing and working with the design teams and like all. It's like a perfect fit for Josh's skill set.
Congrats to Josh. That's amazing.
Yes, absolutely. It is a very cool thing. I talked to him yesterday. He had his first day yesterday. So I talked to him and he said it was, he said, this is going to be fun, was what he ended the description of the day with. So
I'm it's a great place and the team there is amazing. You guys all met them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're hoping to like do some stuff with First Build too. You know, he's in charge of like the community and like trying to build community around what they do, which is what he did for us, you know, so it's a really fantastic thing. He's doing that. Megan moved on to another job a few weeks ago. Talked to her a couple days ago. She's doing great. She's enjoying the new thing, doing marketing and social media stuff. Anthony's moving on to a new job next week that he's excited about. They're all moves up for my friends, which is good. And I'm very excited for that reason, for them, for that reason. You know, it's all of that is happening because of a lot of stuff is just changing with, I like to make stuff, changing with me personally. Just the last couple of years have not been a lot of fun for me. So trying to refocus and reprioritize and stuff like that. And most of that is none of anybody else's business. So I'm not really going to go into it, but it was a big change and a big, several big decisions that affected a lot of people that I care about a lot, you know? And so that kind of general topic kind of launched us talking about before we started recording about just big decisions and about change and stuff. And I know we've all had different, you know, parts of our careers, different careers and different parts of those careers where there have been big upheavals or big steps back or steps forward or whatever. So I thought it would be interesting just to talk about some of those things that we've all been through, because I think everybody gets to that at some point, even if things are going super well. Sometimes you just have to, you know, you have to have a change for things to go better or for things to go right or whatever. So kind of throw it out there. I don't know. What do you guys have on that?
Well, I've been talking about it with a friend of mine. I told you in the beginning, before we started recording, a friend of mine's having some business troubles and can't seem to get it together. And I suggested to this person what I've been through personally, which is you got to take a step back to go forward. Sometimes you got to look at your scene and you realize you have all these various things that you're used to because you've gotten to this level. And like me, I look around when you guys have seen me, I'm in my shop today. I look around all this and I always have that backup plan in my mind because I've been there. What has to happen if the Titanic hits an iceberg? What has to happen? Mm-hmm. What do I need to do to downsize, to be able to go to my core and survive that and then build back again? And because I've been there. And I was suggesting to my friend that they sell some of their machines or rent some of their space, share the space, but it's tough. I mean, I can imagine now if I'm all alone in this place and if I had to bring in somebody to help me pay the bills, I'd have to make compromises. But at the same time, you're taking a step back to take a step forward. And that's the one thing you always have to remember in business is when you're up against it and you're not getting what you need, you have to make some changes and it's all in the name of going forward, but you've got to step back. And the other thing too is a lot of people don't realize is like we climb this ladder. And if you get to the 12th rung of the ladder and you got to go down to the 10th rung of the ladder, it's not, you're not going back to zero again. I mean, sometimes maybe you have to and then you build back again. But if you build up, 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 and then you got to do a couple of steps back and then go up again, you're not giving it all up. And we've all created certain levels to our career and certain things we're used to, and you just got to make compromises. And you know, God forbid if there's a catastrophe, you got to go back to zero. That's why we have insurance and friends and family. We deal with it there, but just smaller minor decisions in business, you just got to confront it. And there was something where I said recently when I was talking about it in the house, when I'm looking through the house and I'm working on the house, it's a similar gut punch when you're looking around the house and you're like, okay, this whole entire section has to be removed and rebuilt. Whereas I'm making plans to refinish it and then I open up the wall and I'm like, oh, this is never going to work. And you just take a step back to take a step forward. So once you take the gut punch and you think it through a little bit, you're like, okay, all right, it'll be better if I rip down all these walls, then they'll be straighter, cleaner. I'll be able to put plumbing in them more easily. I'll be up to code. They'll last another 100 years. If I try to use these won't last. So that idea of first taking that initial hit and thinking, oh, this is going to be horrible. I remember my own personal situation when my landlord called me and said, we want our workshop back in the basement. I remember feeling the panic in that phone call. And she's like, but I'll give you 6 months to move out. And then I stepped back and I was like, this is going to be tough. It's going to cost me everything I have in the bank to move and to find a new place. And that was when I thought I was going to buy that old gas station. Thankfully, that didn't work out. And I ended up getting the bigger, more commercial space off the beaten path for a fraction of the price. And that worked out great. I still have it. So just the idea of the gut punch and then assessing and moving forward, making the right decisions for everybody. You got to do it. Everybody will experience it at one point.
Yeah, I always seem to welcome change or encourage change for myself because I think I get kind of bored with things if things are going well. I mean, I know I've been very lucky with things going well, but things like making the same how-to videos for years just gets a little stale. And thankfully, the views went down and it caused me to look and see, what should I do? If I want to keep doing this, what should I do? And made some changes and things are working. Some things don't work, but I welcome change. This goes back to just like living at home with my parents, and I would just rearrange the bedroom every once in a while just because change just feels feels really good. It's like it's a reset
too. I never even thought about that.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, and I don't have like a gut punch story that I can think of or that I really want to share, but just little things like Jimmy says, taking a step back and then going forward. So there was I was talking to my brother a couple weeks ago, and he's like, these particular videos, they do really well for you. Why don't you keep making them? I'm like, that's because I don't feel good. They don't feel like the thing that I want to do. The videos that I really want to do, sometimes they don't work, but I know that there's a way to make them work. I got to keep pushing for them. So I want change, and I know that this YouTube thing isn't going to last forever. So there's going to be a huge change for me somewhere down the road. And so I'm actually behind the scenes working on that. I think possibly real estate or investments is the next chapter in my life. Hopefully that's not the main income for a long time, because I want to keep doing what I do. But yeah.
Well, it's interesting too, like even thinking about that, you know, as you look at an alternative future and you start trying to build that thing up, whether that other thing is the main income source or not, it actually can afford you the potential to continue to make videos with less pressure.
Yeah.
If the videos don't have to be 100% of your income, then like it doesn't matter as much. And like maybe you'll enjoy making them just for making them, not because they have to do well.
Yeah.
Which is a totally weird thing to think about for us, you know? I mean, we haven't made videos just for the fun of it in a really, really long time. Mm-hmm. Any of us. And it's just not kind of what we do. But having that capacity, that sounds pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I've had a few things over my life that, business things that have, you know, kind of, I've never had like a full crash to where everything went back to zero and I just had to completely start over. But I have had several steps backwards. I had a business with a friend of mine. We had like a design company and we, you know, built it up at one point. I think we had 12 or 14 employees. I don't remember. And we were working for this agency. I've told the story before, but they basically wanted to buy us for to become their in-house agent, like design, web design group or whatever. But when it came down to it, they bought us, but all they were doing was essentially taking us over. Now, I didn't walk away from that with any more money than I had before. I mean, I got a higher salary, but it's not like there was a buyout fee. So I didn't have any money. But the thing that I took away from that, what I was giving up was control. But what I was also giving up was responsibility. So then I didn't have to worry about coming up with money for those 14 or 15, 12, whatever people. I didn't have the pressure of worrying about their paychecks and worrying about, you know, are we going to be able to keep the lights on? And like, how do we, you know, now we have to replace the air conditioning lines again because some chump stole our copper in front of the building. You know, like that happened several times and we had to deal with that. And so that was a trade-off in that moment of my life where like, no, I'm not getting really any more money for this thing that I've spent 7 or 8 years building, but I'm letting go of a lot of the weight that just piles on over time with growth. You don't even see that stuff happening usually. But, and honestly, I think a lot of that is what's been happening for me for the last couple of years. Growth has been great. The economy was going one direction and then not that direction anymore. And so the growth ended up having a lot more weight in a lot of different ways than I was expecting. And I didn't see it happening, you know? So I think there's been a few things like that where it feels like a step backwards, but the truth of the matter is it's building margin. It provides you rest. It provides you capacity to do something new or do something different. And then I've also had, you know, the situation where, you know, going to do what I'm doing now full time was a big jump. You know, it was another financial mystery, whether it was a good idea or not. But it was letting go of the responsibility of making software for other people and being able to have the capacity to do whatever I wanted to, you know. So those jumps can either be for relief or they can be for new opportunity, or sometimes you just get hit in the face and you just got to deal with it, you know. Sometimes the engine in your favorite vehicle locks up and then you just don't have that vehicle for 14 months and you have to pay for that vehicle. Sometimes it takes a really long time to get that vehicle, or, you know, I mean, there's health stuff. There's all these things that are totally out of your, I mean, even back to the economy thing, the economy stuff is totally out of your control. So no matter how good you are with planning or with business, sometimes there's just forces that are
beyond your control.
And you have to figure out how to deal with those things.
That's when you say to yourself, what is in my control?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get rid of this. I don't need this indulgence. I don't need that indulgence. Maybe it's time to sell this project, which is not giving me anything.
Or decide, you know, of all the things that you do, no matter what industry you're in or what part of life you're in, of all the things that all of the things that occupy your day, that occupy your mind, that occupy your bank account, what are those things need to be there? What are the things that you absolutely want, the things that you need? And then what's the rest of the stuff? Because the rest of the stuff, if it doesn't have to be done, it can create margin, whether that margin is within your bank account or within your head or within your heart or within your, you know, shop. I mean, clearing out things that are not necessary, it gives you margin, which matters. So a lot of times you don't realize when you have extra capacity in your life, but you absolutely realize when it's not there. I do anyway. Mm-hmm. I can feel that big time. But so I've been going through a lot of change with this stuff, and the change is not done. It's not settled. But I can already feel that margin beginning to return. Yesterday with all of my friends moving on to, not all of my friends, three of my friends moving on to other jobs. Yesterday, my wife took the kids to school and Forby was working on an edit. So I knew what he was doing and, you know, he's always being productive and everything, but he was at the office and I was at home, and it was very strange in the morning to be like, nobody in my family, nobody that I work with needs me to do anything right now. Now, the truth of the matter is they probably didn't need me to do anything before.
But felt pressure.
I had this pressure of like, I have to be productive in this
every minute.
8:30 this morning on a Tuesday, has to be productive, because if not, somebody else is going to feel it. And so I had this weird sitting there with my coffee, like, I'm going to go sit on the back porch and try to come up with an idea. I'm not going to do, I'm not going to, you know, if I don't, no big deal. I'm not going to stress about it. I'm not going to go look at email or whatever. Nobody needs me for the first time. I feel that way for the first time in a really long time. And I'm going to go breathe that in and relax a little bit. And so I don't know. I don't really have a point to this. I'm not trying to like say anything other than there's a lot of change happening for me, and it's hard and good. And a month from now, I will probably feel a different way about it. It will still be hard and good and not good. And you know what I mean? It's going to, like I said, it's not settled, but I'm in the middle of it, have been in the middle of it for a while. And I would encourage anybody who has been, you know, knocked back to it, like, or knocked forward, or however you want to look at it, to like kind of embrace that.
I know that you are going to thrive through this, and it's going to be bigger and better. And I know that because if I was dealing with something stressful and a big change, you are one of the first people that I would go to for advice because of the way that you think things through and plan things out. And so it's just Bob Clegg and I Like to Make Stuff is going to be bigger than ever because of this, of what's happening right now.
Oh, I appreciate that. I don't know that I want that.
Right.
Okay. To be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But I appreciate what you're saying.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's remove the, yeah, I Like to Make Stuff. Bob Clegg, it will be bigger and better personally and internally.
Yeah.
Because of all this.
Absolutely. I mean, I hope so. Yeah.
You have the other thing, too, is you have no option. You're going to be fine. You're an honest, good, hardworking person with a good family, and no one's going to let you fall.
Yeah. Yeah. A huge amount of support around everything as well. Yeah. No doubt about that. And I think a lot of, you know, with like maybe it's middle age stuff, I don't know. But the last couple of years, a lot of my internal just reprioritization, that's a long word, of just like the stuff, like where my time is spent, my brain and heart are spent, you know? It's so easy to get wrapped up in just like, I care about this thing, or I have to make this thing work, or I have to, you know, I gotta care so much about thumbnails because thumbnails are what cause the, you know, and like, I don't want to be occupied by that. It's a part of what I do for a living, and I have to think about it.
To be honest, I the older I get and what has happened to me, the people who know me personally, and Bob, you always laugh when we hang out together. I literally emotionally let go of a lot of things. Like, I'm not saying I don't pay attention, but like worrying about taxes and worrying about healthcare and worrying about thumbnails and worrying about, I get to the point where I'm worried about it and then I just forget that it even exists. And when people bring it up, I'm like, I don't care. I mean, it's taken care of, but try not to. I remember right when we got out of art school, me and a few friends were hanging around at this free lunch job I was at, and everyone was talking about taxes and what if, and taxes, and I'm just like, I'm looking at them like, oh my God, these are like free thinking artists, and they're so wrapped up in this idea of like taxes and what to save receipts on, and I kind of made a decision early on. Obviously, I pay my taxes and I take care of it and I hire people to do it for me, but I'm not going to be emotionally attached to it. I'm not going to let it pull me down or give me that gut punch that I felt about it. You know, I just use taxes as an example, but there were several things in my life which I just emotionally have let go of. Mostly because I have no control over.
Right.
And that gut punch is, that gut feeling and that desperation you feel is because you feel like I have to fix it or I have to do it right or I don't want to do it wrong or I don't want to get in trouble or I don't want to, all those things. And then you like, you look back and you go, I'm just going to do the best I can with what I have and I'm not going to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And then whatever happens, happens. And whatever comes through that door, we'll just deal with it as it comes through the door.
And I think a lot of those feelings are based in fear. 100%. I don't understand taxes. And
100%. And that's why I said, I choose not to just worry about it. Unless it becomes a problem, then I'll handle that problem. Right. It's like washing dishes. You look at that sink and you're like, oh my God, it's full of you know what? Let's grab the very first cup on top, wash that, and then deal with the next one. And then after a few minutes, it's all gone.
You know, I was watching last night. I've talked about him before, but the Wild Wonderful Off Grid is a YouTube channel. And it's this couple, and they live in West Virginia off grid. And they built an A-frame, this beautiful A-frame home. Like, it's beautiful. And they have a homestead farm, and they do all, and they've got like all these other properties that they've been renovating and all this stuff. So they built this A-frame a couple years ago, and we watched them as they were building it from nothing on a mountainside, this beautiful location. And now they're going back and they're adding another like wing to the house on the backside of it. They're building a rectangular, like two-story, the bedroom wing, so that then they can convert the A-frame into just like living space stuff. And it's so funny watching them last night. It's just a husband and wife framing a house from scratch of their own design. And the first time I watched them do it, I thought, man, like, they are figuring it out. You could tell that they didn't, you know, they hadn't done it before. He's an electrician, and they hadn't done it before, and they were figuring it out, and they would do things wrong, and they would go back and they would fix it. And then this time, they're like framing the entire house in a day or two, and they're just flying through it and talking about it like, oh yeah, we just got to put the rim joists here and the thing, you know, we got to put the dip, and just doing it. And I was like, they've done this one time, literally one time, and they were gung-ho about it, but they still had to figure stuff out. This time, they're just like zooming through it because they have just a tiny, not tiny, they have a small amount of institutional knowledge about a thing that they would have been scared about a couple of years ago. And so watching them, it dawned on me in the moment that like a lot of times, at least me, I think all three of us do this, but at least me, I'm doing a lot of the things that I do on a daily basis for the first time. And I don't typically come back and do them a second time, which means I don't carry that institutional knowledge and that confidence into another thing. My point in all this stuff is taxes are a great example of a thing that just feels terrifying to me. I'm going to do it wrong. I'm going to miss a thing. I'm going to go to prison because I didn't file some form. But if you do it once, or you sit with somebody who's doing it, you realize like, oh, okay. I mean, there's a lot of ins and outs, but once you've framed that wall up, you know how to do it. It doesn't mean you have to keep doing it, but you understand it and you're not scared of it. So I think one of the things that I've been like, I don't know, hoping for is going back and redoing some things that I've done in the past, going back and spending a little bit more time. I don't know if you could see, there's a cello behind me.
Oh,
see that cello? There's a cello. A friend of mine gave me a cello and she played for, I don't know, 15, 20 years or something like that, and then just stopped playing. I played cello for about 10 weeks in college and I loved it, but I was terrible at it. And she recently was just like getting rid of this cello. And so she brought it to our house and dropped it off. And so now I have a thing that I just had the smallest amount of institutional knowledge about. Now I get to go back and actually figure it out on my own pace, where I'm not getting graded for it in school, you know, all these things. Yeah. But so like, I'm trying to find things like that, that I've just barely tried. And now that I'm creating some margin in my life to do things that I want to do in addition to the things that I need to do, I'm trying to find things like the cello that I can jump into and just like, just, I don't know, get. Like, I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm not going to perform. I'm not going to record it. I just kind of want to get it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that's a long tale from the taxes thing, but I do think that there's something to be said for being afraid of something and then just going back and like picking at it a little bit until you're not afraid of it.
I'm going to throw an idea out there, and I think I told you this when we were together the other day. I think now's a perfect time for you to start your A-frame. Just saying it.
Somebody else brought that up as well.
A little bit at a time. All you need to do is just do the first step. You know, grab that first dish on the top of a pile of dirty dishes and do the first step.
I would 100% agree with that, except that building a house costs money and getting that initial investment of just like foundation.
You have the property, right?
Yeah, the property is there. Yeah. But somebody want to donate a house worth of wood to me, you let me know. I'll get started on it.
Time. I mean, it's taken me going on nearly 4 years building my horse barn in the backyard.
Yeah.
And I know the struggle.
But yeah. It is something I want to do. I do think it's probably something that I will wait until at least some of my kids are in college, you know, and like start picking at it then, trying to do it before then. Although it would be awesome to actually include them in building a house that they can then use as adults. So that would be pretty cool too. So nah, I don't know.
Just look, do it in like 10 phases and just price out those 10 and only worry about that phase. Because once that's done, you don't have to worry about it again.
Right. Oh yeah. You know? I mean, I know what the phases are. Or at least you could also, few. Yeah.
I mean, I'm only suggesting this because me and Howard were talking about this the other day. You could take out a construction loan, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'll have that money and then you just pay it back. And this way you're not worrying about anything. You're just worrying about where to come up with that loan payment.
Not worrying about anything except for paying for the thing.
No, I mean, instead of paying $10,000, you know, out of pocket a foundation, you only have to come up with a, you know, $1,000 payment that covers everything. You know, that might, and then, you know, when things flip or things go better, you just pay it off quicker.
Yeah.
This is usually what I do. Anytime I take any sort of financial aid on anything, I'm like, you know what? Okay. I just have to hunker down and pay that minimum. I pay that minimum. But when things get better, I throw two payments in the mail for 1 month or three payments in the mail for 1 month if I'm doing really good.
Yeah.
And then what happens is every time I get that bill, it says nothing's due, nothing's due, nothing's due. The next payment is July 2024. You know, that's like I open my car.
Yeah, you just get further and further ahead. Yeah.
And then if I need to take a break, I could take a break. I always throw something in the mail. Might not be the full payment that's due, but since I'm so far ahead on, you know, a couple of things, I do have that stretch so that when I was able to pay with money, now that I'm in the life of a freelancer, now that things are low, I can relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a suggestion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would love to, and I think it's still something I'm going to do at some point, but it's every time I think about doing another big thing, I think of the Gia, the poor Gia sitting out there.
I knew you were going to say that, of course.
And I'm like, I should probably make a little more progress on that first.
Just move every little thing along a little bit at a time.
Yeah, that's true. Any other thoughts on this? I don't want to drag it out or anything, and I didn't really have anything to accomplish with talking about it other than just pointing out that everybody...
No, well, sometimes, you know, I'd like to point out, and it's only because my friend I was talking about, there's a certain shame attached to it, and there shouldn't be. Mm. It's a gut punch, and I've been there. I know the shame I felt where I'm like, oh, everybody thinks I'm this like millionaire toy guy, and I got to turn around and say, I'm giving up my lease on my shop because I can't afford the next year's worth of rent. I have 5 employees. They're all going to go do their own thing now because I can't afford to keep paying them. And then how am I going to make a living just in one little tiny basement shop? I moved from a ground floor, 3,000 square foot drive-in garage to a basement of a tenement building. And that's where I started my next career, which led to my basement shop. And before, I don't know if I ever made this clear, before I had the basement city shop that everybody knows from the beginning of my YouTube, I was in an above ground shop as big as the one I'm sitting in now. In Manhattan, with a drive-through, me and my had my Cadillac parked in there. My brother had his Harley Davidson parked. Everybody thought we were the drug dealers. We were like Miami Vice. Everything was going good, and we had all of our clients that were giving us. The way we work with clients is we do their package design, product development, and prototyping and invention. In some cases, sometimes they came to us with the invention, and we would handle all that for them for as much as $10,000 a month, so that we were getting checks for $10,000, $12,000 a month from various clients. And they would hire us so that they wouldn't have to staff up and put people on staff. They would just have, if they gave us $5,000 a month, we'd give them all the support they need for their back room, package design, samples. And one by one, they would, what began to happen was China factories would be like, hey, we'll do all that. If you're going to bring this product here and have it made here, we'll do everything you need. We'll do your package design, your prototyping, where when we first started that business, all that was done in America, and then we would just literally bring the only product that needs to be manufactured to the factory. The factory started saying, we'll handle everything for you just to get job security with that. Because if you just go to a factory with a widget and say, here it is, handle it. And they go, okay, and then you're handling it, but you take that same widget to 6 factories. Now they all know they're competing against each other. But if the factory says, hey, I'll handle everything for you for free, so I have job security that when this product gets made, you're going to keep it here. You're not going to go shop somewhere else.
Oh, right.
And so that started happening in the 90s, and slowly, one by one, all of our clients kind of dissipated. And we had nobody that was going to pay the overhead we had. And we had to just downsize. But the point I'm making is I downsized from what seemed like this great career that was never going to end. I remember having an argument with a girlfriend at the time. And she goes, your life is established. This is it for you. You're going to be a toy inventor until you retire. And like, I always think about that because that was such another lifetime ago. That was a whole nother human being. Everything about that life, that style, everything was completely somebody else. Then I downsized. I got this little tiny basement shop for $400 a month. And I built a whole new career in that basement shop, which leads me to right where we are now. And if things kept going, I would have been this weirdo toy inventor trying to figure out how to use Instagram.
Now you're just a weirdo.
No, a lot of my toy inventor contemporaries didn't really make the change and get... Steve Cassino is the only one that did. Steve Cassino is the peanut guy.
I love his
art. Steve Cassino is... Steve's amazing. He was always a natural artist anyway, but he just loved toys. And now he combines them. So Steve is the only one I know from the toy business besides me that's been able to make the change into the new world of social media and using it to your advantage. And Steve has a whole new career. Steve is just a peanut guy. Instead of him trying to sell ideas, he is the idea. Everything he does is he's marketing himself. And I'm really happy to see because Steve is such a nice guy. It couldn't happen to a better guy. But he made it happen because he saw the writing on the wall. Long story short, step back to go forward and shouldn't feel any shame about it. Everybody listening.
Yeah. I agree with that. Any last thoughts, David?
I think we should take a step back and thank our Patreon.
Oh, look at that transition. Well, smooth.
Like, yeah,
big thanks to everybody. Everybody over at Patreon for supporting the show, because that is a steady thing for us, and it matters to all three of us. It's awesome to have the support. When I was in Arkansas, I had pretty much everybody there that I talked to thanked us for doing this podcast. It's wild because, I mean, I get together with you guys and just hang out and talk for an hour a week. That's cool. That's enough for me. But people actually like get something out of it, which is also really cool. But I was amazed, and I'm always amazed at just the kind things that people say about us just getting together and chatting.
Yeah, so, it's beautiful.
Very, very grateful for that. But especially the Patreon supporters go above and beyond. They don't just say thank you. They do say thank you, but they also do other stuff. So big thanks to everybody over there, especially those people that go above and beyond, pay extra. Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Designs, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott Orem, The New Janky Workshop, Stu Morrison, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, The Web Ranch Woodworks, and Crabtree Creative. We also have some new patrons. I want to shout out some people who have come on. That's something we should have been doing all along. We haven't. In the last couple weeks, we've had... he sent us a message saying how to pronounce his name. Mucklepticon? He said it was like Decepticon.
Oh.
Mucklepticon. And he said that, Jimmy, you tried to say his name at some point. Or they said that you tried to say their name. You're muted, so I don't know.
I was just practicing before I say it.
Mucklepticon, I think?
Mucklepticon.
Yeah. Mucklepticon. Also, Lars Anderson, Elias Barabbas, Charles Henbest, and I Make TV. Joe Jax.
Oh, Joe's awesome. Joe's going to come stay here during Maker Camp.
Oh, right on.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, they've all joined in the last couple weeks, so big thanks to them for hopping on, supporting the show. They get the after show. Everybody gets the after show, no matter what level they support at. So if you would like to get the after show, which is more of us talking about other things, then go to patreon.com/makingit. Join up at whatever level makes sense for you. And yeah, we really appreciate it. What do you guys have to recommend this week?
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, sometimes I forget that we're recording the podcast, and I just think of this as my like Wednesday therapy session. Because I always come, I always feel, no matter what mood I'm in, I always feel good after recording the podcast. So, thank you. Even if I'm not dealing with any problems, for whatever reason, I just feel so good after the podcast. Anyway, my pick is from Robinson Foundry. There's this video that I came across last night called I Made a Bolt with Maze Threads. And it's basically a big bolt and the nut comes off through this maze. And he shows the process of how he made this puzzle with 3D printing and then melting the 3D print through. I don't know the terminology of the stuff that he used, but it's incredible and it looks amazing and it's worth your watch.
You know, I saw that thumbnail and it didn't even register in my brain what was happening. But now that you say the name of it, I'm like, oh, well, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm interested to watch it. And for everybody else, that noise that you just heard was Jimmy sanding his fingernails with a giant piece of sandpaper while David was
I think my microphone switched. Do I sound okay?
You sound okay, but there is it raining where you are? Because there's been this constant hiss the whole time.
There's like a...
Yeah.
That's because I'm on the computer microphone, I just noticed, because my plug is... So, I'm sorry.
Oh, all good.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just double checked because I noticed the plug is sticking out of the microphone and the levels aren't bouncing. So if you guys haven't complained yet, then we might be okay.
Well, when you subscribe to the Making It podcast, you subscribe to Raw Making It.
That's right. It's certainly not for quality.
It's certainly not for quality.
Yeah. All right. What's your recommendation, Jimmy? What you got?
I was going to say check out Millennial Stone Cleaner. That's Wade Fowler. He's the guy who came out and helped me. And then while you were talking about watching the family, your family building your thing, you know, we created that painting in our minds. Have you guys seen Trustin Timber lately, what he's been doing out in his property?
Yeah.
It's great. He's got a new addition to his team. He's got his little daughter helping him. And it's amazing what him and his wife are putting together out there in the woods. And he trolled people a couple of weeks ago. Did you notice that? He put up a thing where he built... I don't think he meant to troll them, but he's got a funny... What's crazy is that we're all builders and we can build something. If we build something that's weird or unusual, it doesn't matter. We'll build it again. But Trustin put up a post where he used two standing trees as a foundation for a building he's made. The two standing trees are still in the ground. Maybe they died or maybe he killed them by cutting them, but he would have cut them down and used them as wood anyway. But the comments are bananas. It's just everybody who knows that's going to die. The building's going to fall over. It's crazy. But I thought it was funny because he's saying the reason they'll be being like, it's going to be fine. But it's just another, it's a funny thing where the people that come in and comment don't realize that they're being pulled in to create a dust storm to get some attention.
Engagement. So anyway.
Yeah, check out Trustin. He's an amazing dude who's at Making It 100.
Yeah.
35 years ago this week.
Happy anniversary.
Yep.
Yeah.
35 years.
Wow. Feels like only yesterday. He's a magician, too. I did not know about that.
I didn't know that.
Really? You don't remember that? Okay, so we're at Making It 100 in Boston. We're sitting around after the event was over at
a restaurant.
And so he pops over to our table, whoever we were sitting with a deck of cards and starts doing like magic right in front of us. And it was ridiculous.
I vaguely remember this now.
And he's just going from table to table doing tricks for different people, different tricks, you know.
It's been 35 years.
Yeah, it was a long time. He was a wee lad at that point. All right. So I have one thing that I was going to recommend, but it doesn't work. So I can't actually tell you if it works or not, if it's cool or not. I saw a post on Instagram for a website called motiongen.io, and it's free, they said. And so I went to try it, and it says the website is currently down for maintenance.
Oh, is that the one where the guy does Thursday. Like the pinpoints and he's circling? Everyone sent it to me where it's like he's doing like a
you can build linkages.
Thing. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like really complex linkages in 2D, and you can set the parameters for it, and so you can test out a linkage, and then I think you could even like create files and print directly from there.
Interesting.
Yeah. I saw that.
It looked really interesting, but the website is down, so I don't know. And he said it was free. So that's one interesting thing. The other thing is a book, and this is not going to be for everybody. I get it, but it's a book that I have read twice now. I've passed it on to a few of my friends. It's called Becoming a King, and like I said, this is not for everybody, but it's about... as someone who has faith, that's me, it's about using that faith to become the person that you should be to take care of the things that you have to take care of. And so it's made a really big impact on me in the last year or so. I've read it a couple of times about becoming a good steward of the things that you have responsibility for. And so if that sounds like something that you're even remotely would apply to you, which I think it would, could be applied, whether you agree with my faith or not, I think it could be applied to you in really productive ways to make you better at who you are. So I just recommend that book to people. Take it or leave it, but it's a good one and has changed a lot of stuff about me.
Bob, say the name of the book clearly.
Becoming a King. Okay. And it's actually not a great title for what it is, but yeah, it's good.
Cool.
And that's what I got. You guys got anything else for this week? Okay, I guess not. Cool. Well, I'm glad to be back. Glad to be recording again.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.
Thank
buddy.
You.
Well,
I'm gonna tell in the after story. I'm gonna tell the ghost story.
Oh, ghost stories in the after show. Okay, cool. I get to hear it again. Yay! Thanks for listening.
No, I didn't tell you this part.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's good. Bye bye.